This is Outside the Round with Matt Barile, a Rage Rowdy podcast.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Outside the Round with me, Matt Barile. Today, a longtime friend of the family. He's a proud Tennessee native, a lover of chicken parm sandwiches. He's got his debut album coming out, and he's got his Opry debut here coming up soon. It's my boy, Drew Green.
What's up, baby?
What's going up, buddy? How you doing?
Love it, man. This place is awesome. I haven't been here.
Dude, and it's right down the road from
you. Dude, it's like next door. Yeah, it's great.
It's awesome, man. So how is life?
It's been killer, man. It's been busy. Like you said, we got the new album coming out, which is like a long time coming.
Yeah.
I've put out tons of EPs. Been doing this for like die hard for, 3 years doing the artist gig, but I've been here like 13. So it's been, I'm really excited to have my first album coming out.
Yeah, man. It's funny looking back to when you and I first met, because I'd met you through Ethan Willis back in the day.
I was probably still playing at Tootsie's back then.
Before COVID. I like to say BC before COVID.
Before my first record deal, yeah.
Like 2018, 2019 was when I met you, and then got to know you, obviously, through our mutual buddy, RIP to our friend Sam Johnson.
Yeah.
And getting to just watch your journey over the years to now with the debut full-length record coming out. Like you said, you've been putting out music now for a while, and the Opry debut coming up, man. But I want to back up. Tell me a little bit about McMinnville.
McMinnville, Tennessee, baby.
Is it McMinn? Do you say it like Louisville, where it's like McMinnville, or how do you?
I say McMinnville. My mom says McMinnville. So
McMinnville. Okay, there's a little A in there.
I think a lot of locals play Matt say McMinnville, but it's McMinnville. Yeah. It's about an hour and a half southeast of Nashville, and it's nothing but farmland and trees. It's the nursery capital of the world. So
really?
It's nothing but trees. So I grew up on about 100-acre farm, and which now my family's business has grown so much since I started doing music. My brother's 5 years younger than me. He's taking it over. So it's been it's a big business going on. They're crushing it. But some days I'm like, I could be on the farm probably doing a lot better than I'm doing right now. The struggle of up and downs of the music career, but I love singing, man. I think my dad worked me pretty hard as a kid, and it kind of pushed me into the music career a little bit, and I've always just loved singing, so I'm happy to be here still.
Yeah, growing up about an hour and a half, you said, south of town. When did you start coming up here?
It's crazy. I was in college at Tennessee Tech in Cookeville when I got the opportunity. Like, long story short, I was drunk at a bar, like underage with a fake ID, and the owner of Tootsie's came in and wanted to hear live music, and I think he was a little intoxicated too, and he paid for some people to play, and I had my guitar. I just moved back to college that day. I had my guitar. I played, and he asked me to play at Tootsie's the next day, and I thought he was just drunk, talking. I really didn't even know what that was. Still. Yeah. I was like 20. I'm from here, but I'd never been downtown. I didn't know the downtown scene at all because I wasn't even of age yet.
Yeah.
And I went there the next day, and I did that thing for a minute, and that's kind of what got me into the thought of, like, maybe I can do this. And that night that he asked me to play, a random guy came up to me and was like, "Man, I think you're really good." His name was Jeremy Mackey, and he's still one of my day one, like, friends, fans. And he handed me an Eric Church Sinners Like Me record.
Oh, the good stuff.
And I didn't even know what it was at that moment. And I went and became obsessed with it, of the songwriting aspect of it. So I started writing songs by myself. I wrote maybe six or seven by myself, and there was no country music scene in my college at all. So I started playing at this bar called Spanky's that was like the place to play. And but everybody there was like Dave Matthews cover bands. And so I just like burned it down the first time I played. Like, the cops were called, people were throwing up in the fountain. I mean, it was an absolute shit show. And I was like, this is kind of cool. I kind of like this, and I gained a pretty big following, and I made a terrible little EP, like with some random dude I met that couldn't record. It was awful. And I thought, maybe I can do this. And so I started playing at Tootsie's. I did that for about 6 months. I started failing college because I was just singing the whole time. And so I quit that, got a finance degree. I got married. I got a job at a bank.
Wow.
I got promoted to manager and trainer. Like, only two people got this gig at Wilson Bank and Trust. It was at Wilson Bank and Trust. And I told my wife one day, I was like, I'm going to regret not going back to music and not like fully dedicating my time to it. Like, I'm probably gonna, like, I feel like I should be doing it, something just told me to keep trying. And as soon as I got promoted, I quit the next day and called Tootsie's back. It'd been like a year and a half, and they somehow remembered me, and somehow somebody called out that day. It was like the luckiest son of a bitch ever. Like, and they I got back into Tootsie's. I did it for 4 years, four nights a week. The best gig. I played 6 to 10, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And the guy that played 10 to close was Hunter Phelps, who's freaking crushing right now. But so we became, like, one night, probably a year into it, my guitar player's string broke, and it was Tuesday night. There was probably four people there. It was, like, dead. And because I played in the back room. And so I played a song I wrote for my wedding. And Hunter was walking in for his gig, and he heard it and was like, man, you want to write tomorrow? And I was like, well, I've never wrote with anybody. But he drove out to – I was living in Lebanon at the time, and he drove all the way out the next day, and we wrote, like, every day for, like, a year together. Yeah. And so that led to me writing with Hardy because they were buddies. And I just got switched from BMI to ASCAP and got put in this program where you meet with all these publishers. And I thought I was ready for a pub deal because that was my what I was shooting at.
Yeah.
Everyone said no, literally everyone, and was a little down about it. And, you know, and as soon as that happened, Hardy calls me. And I'm, like, in the – I'm having my first son. I'm, like, in the delivery room. And literally, it's like 3 minutes away from having a kid. And Hardy calls me and was like, yeah, Florida Georgia Line's cutting this song. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, just having a baby, man. Nothing much.
Dude, you talk about being the luckiest SOB ever.
Yeah, but dude.
It's also, it's the blessings, man. It's
sure.
Like,
oh, dude.
It's right place, right time, and it all happens for a reason. Like, you get told you're having your first major label cut as your little one's being born.
It's phenomenal. Yeah, it was a great day, for sure. And because me and my wife kind of gave myself like a 4 or 5 year window to have any success at all, or else go back to the bank or go back to the farm, something, figure out something, you know.
Yeah.
And she kind of provided for me, because all the money I made at Tootsie's went straight into my recording. I always say there's a guy that used to do all my demos, and he has a really nice house, and I always say I bought his house because I spent so much on demos, you know. Yeah, it's been great, and here I am, and it's been ups and downs. You know, as soon as I signed a record, as soon as the Colorado song came out for FGL that I wrote with Hardy and Hunter, I got the opportunity to sign pretty much kind of wherever I wanted, because I was like, Florida Georgia Line was the biggest duo in country at the time.
Yeah.
And probably still is, but I signed with Corn Man, which is Brett James, and that was like, I knew the minute, it was weird, like, a year before that happened, I remember telling my wife, like, if I could sign anywhere, I would want to be with Brett James. Like, he's my favorite. And
legend.
Yeah, just insane songwriter, insane person, just great dude, all in general. Like, I've looked up to him like a father and a brother for since I've been doing it. But about a year later, I was trying to get a Kenny Chesney cut. So I called him, because he's the king of Kenny Chesney cuts.
Yeah.
And he's like, let's get breakfast, you know, so I could pitch him a few songs. And so I pitched him, you know, I figured he would be like, yo, this sounds good, keep it up, bud, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Typical boss thing, you know, but he listened to like 30, and we were both late for rides that day, and he called me that night and was like, dude, I think you're ready for a record deal if you want one. And I was like, so it's been like a year into my pub deal. I was really wanting to get a lot of cuts. I was writing like for everybody, trying to get lots of cuts. You know,
how you make your wave when
that was the way at the time. That was the way. This is before COVID, before TikTok, before any of that. So the way into the business was to write songs and get known, you know. And I just got a Connor Smith cut, I Hate Alabama. And so I was like, man, I think that song had
a big moment, brother.
Yeah, it was great. And I was like mad at myself for not cutting it whenever it happened, but I wouldn't have it any other way, because like he put it out like the perfect time. He crushed it. And I love Connor.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, as soon as that, I was like, I don't know if I'm like, why am I questioning if I want a record deal? Of course I want a record deal. That's what I did this for, you know?
Yeah.
And I had a record deal a week later with Justin Timberlake and Sony Records. It was insane. It was insane.
It was
just like, what?
Isn't it crazy, like thinking back to your journey and being a journeyman and hanging out at Spanky's and then ending up as one of the house guys at Tootsie's?
Yeah.
And then you get to know and work with Brett James and then Timberlake.
It's like
records.
It's like you're in a slump. You're like, what am I gonna do? It's been a year. I haven't had any good things happen, minus me playing and writing. I'm writing every day. I've got so many songs that no one's ever going to hear. And it's like, I'm in that state, you know. And then the next thing you know, Justin Timberlake sent me a video of him singing my song, Good Old Man, in his car with his fucking wife. And I'm like, what? You know, it's like, what's happening? And I signed my record deal like a week later, and the COVID happened the next day. I was without a doubt the last person and the business probably to sign a record deal before COVID. I only had 1,000 followers on Facebook when I signed my record deal. How crazy is that? Like nowadays, that's like you have no shot unless you're just freaking crazy.
Yeah. So take me back to 2020. You have all these big things happening. Cause I remember that. Cause that was when we had you playing the rounds at Live Oak.
Yeah.
And like, we were kind of running around with the same crew. You were getting out on the road. Yeah. Like, it was all starting to happen.
And then Trey Lewis, I was doing some shows with him too. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. We did Cruisins.
Yeah. That
Peoria.
Was crazy, bro. That story's not for the mic.
No, we can talk about that after for sure. Shout out to Wayno and Austin
dude,
and the USA.
Was
concerts
insane.
Family.
Insane. Yeah, I love that place.
Yeah, we have a good time in Peoria.
That place is crazy.
It ain't for the faint of heart. It's a special,
no,
it's a special
place.
Joint, man.
It is.
But talk about your mindset of the world shuts down. You're a dad. You're married. Like, and you got to provide for your family, but you can't go out and do shows. You're obviously the bars are closed. You're kind of past that at this point. But take me back to 5 years ago.
I mean, in the simplest form, they pretty much just handed me a phone and said, go get famous on TikTok. And I didn't know what that was. Everyone's going through a period of, at this time, everyone's going through a period of, do I even want to do this TikTok thing? Because that's the, you looked at it like people shunned it. People like, you know, and I was like, I'm not dancing for nobody. Because at the time, that's really all it was dancing when it first started, you know. And I was like, if this is the way, then okay, this is not what I grew up wanting to do.
You wanted to write songs and sing them.
You know, I grew up watching, you know, like an Eric Church video or an Al Dean video and, you know, riding the tractor, watching freaking CMT at night or MTV, you know, the music videos. And like there was a moment where everyone was very like suspicious. You don't know when an album's going to drop. You don't know anything until it's in the store, you know. It's like, and there was beauty of the artistry to that. And then now, and so I'm like, so they want me to just like live my life and show everyone all the time. And that was a little weird at first, but I was like, you know, if I'm going to do it, I'm just going to do what I do. And so I just sang a video of me singing in my truck one day. And I asked my son behind me, who was three. He says 2020 because he was in 17. So I was like, how old are you? And he said four. And I was like, I wrote this when you were one. And then I sang a song that I wrote for him called Good Old Man. And the next day I woke up and I had 84,000 followers on TikTok. It was like so fast. It was like, I mean, like I said, everything was just like nothing, hard times, bam. And it's just like every day, it's like every successful thing that's happened to me has been that way.
Yeah, man. And it's just an innocent video of you with your little man like, saying,
absolutely,
hey, bud, check out this song I wrote when you were one.
And in 24 hours, 23,000 people had already used it like in their videos on their TikTok. So I was like, and it broke like a Shazam record thing. Like, I mean, it was crazy. And so I'm like, okay, well, this might go to radio. Like, I'm thinking in my head, because I just signed my record deal. They've gave me all these little checklists. And I broke, and I checked all those checklists for, like, social media aspects in one day. So I'm like, okay. so we're going
ridiculous
you know, we're
when
going
you say
radio.
It out loud, bro. You check it all in one day.
Yeah, I mean, we're, like, looking at, like, a four-month program of, like, getting this many things. We did it all in one night. So I'm like, okay. We're going radio, you know? And so we got a couple dates. We got a couple things happen. There were some things that got in the way. Like there was a song that was out about a kid at the time that went number one. And there was another song that came out by somebody else that was similar, like whatever. But I'm like, this is the biggest one of the, like, I feel like it's doing pretty well, you know? And we didn't do it on radio. So that caused a really big, not to get like the politics of the industry, but like it caused a really big fight between me and like my two, because I was on the Justin Timberlake side, which was Villa 40. And the Sony side, and so they got into a little bit of argument for about 6 months. It was kind of like getting ghosted / arguments about what we should or shouldn't be doing. And I moved to town to be a radio guy, but at the same time I'm crushing the streaming game. So they're like, you don't really need to go to radio right now. And so I'm like, cool. I'm like, I'm a listener more than I am like I'm not gonna tell you what I need to be doing. Like if everybody's like, the people that are supporting me and my team are like, we're crushing this right now, we should stay doing this. I'm like, cool. But a lot of people didn't believe that. And so I was like, if we're not going to like come together, we should like separate, like split it ways, because we're not getting anything done arguing about it, you know? And I was on tour with Russell Dickerson at the time out west, and it was awesome. And they were kind of paying for it. And I didn't ask off specifically. I just asked to split ways. And then, so I guess that's asking off, but and they said no, because they were funding all my tours and stuff. And I just had an EP fixing to come out. And so about 6 months later, I asked again, and it was cool, and they gave me, like, my masters of the stuff that I recorded back. It was a really, like, innocent, sweet breakup. Like, it wasn't a, like they got dropped and fired, like
which is
like,
hard to find in this world.
And I don't even like talking about it really because everybody is like the common denominator is like, yeah, Drew got dropped, which is fine. I don't care. Like that's that, and that's what technically on paper happens because you do get you're not there anymore.
Yeah.
But
the way the business works.
Technically, it was like we just stopped giving them material so that we could be out. You know. So yeah. However you want to look at it. And I was like, I'm done with record deals. Screw Nashville. I did the, like, I went through that independent moment of like, I'm just going to do it myself or go back to the farm even. Like, you know, I was still at that point. And then I put out a video of me singing a lot of Bit of You. And it just, like, again, out of nowhere, like, next day, like, 200,000 followers. Like, it's like, I mean, insane, like, overnight craziness. And about a week later, what do you know? I got 6 labels calling me in one day. Like my name had to just go across every desk, and
as soon as you hit that point of being like, should I be doing this, or am I going to head back home to the farm, or am I going to go back to the bank? The universe just comes at you with
everything.
You're staying in, boy.
Yeah. You're still in. You still got more time, and so I was like, I'm not signing another deal. We're crushing. I've made more money off this independent song than I've made off of all my stuff I did with a label.
Because you own it all.
Because I own every bit of it. Yeah. Like 100% of it. So I'm like, if I can just get one of these a year, I'm set. Like,
yeah.
I'm great. You know, I'm happy. And I was like, but then I started thinking, you know, TikTok's so volatile. I'm up and down all over. Like, it's, you know, one day we're getting every post is 300,000 views, and the next day we're at 3,000.
Yeah.
So it's just so up and down. You know, it's like, and so I prayed about it, talked to my wife about it, and something was just like, I'm a better team player than I am independent. Like, I'm not an independent guy, period. I'm asking, how does this look before I go on stage? Like, I'm not like the guy that's just like, don't give a shit about nobody. I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
So I'm a team player. And so I took some meetings with a guy named Ben from Columbia in LA, and he does Jesse Murph and Co Wetzel, and was a big fan of him from the get-go because he shot me straight about a lot of things. And it was at another point coming out of COVID where the record deals and was changing a lot because record labels were realizing that they don't really play a big part in the world as much as they did.
Yeah.
So they're having to cut the artists' breaks a lot more, and the artists are getting paid a lot more than they were, because in order to sign someone, you're going to have to give them a little bit more. Because like my first deal, I mean, they pretty much just said, you know, and it was my fault because I was getting my first record.
You don't know, bro.
You don't know. Yeah, nobody don't know. These kids come in here and they just get a deal and they're like so happy. And
360, oh my baby. God, 720.
I get 300,000, you know, or whatever. And it's like,
it's all recoupable, baby.
Yeah. And that's like nothing. Yeah. Well, they're about to make you, you know, like, I mean, you're about to make a lot of money, bro.
Yeah.
And so it's a process, but I learned a lot from my first one. And so they sent me an offer, and, love them, but it was a terrible offer. And I was like, I pretty much called him and was like, how in the fuck are you gonna fly up here 3 days, buy me all these food and steaks and coolers, and do, you know, treat me like a king for 3 days,
yeah,
and tell me all this crap, and then send me that. That's what I said. And send him, I was like, what's, I don't understand.
Yeah.
He's like, look, that's just our initial thing, you send us what you want. And so I was like, all right, bet. So I got my attorney, I freaking sent what I wanted, and they didn't change it much. I was like, I don't care if I go to radio. I don't care if I do success at all. I have to take this deal, you know, and it turned out great. And I'm super happy where I am right now. Yeah, it's been awesome. They let me put out as much as I want. You know, I'm trying to do like a song every 4 weeks. And it's like, that's when I see me grow, is when I put out songs in like every 3 weeks.
And that's the fan base that you've built.
Sure. And that's what the world wants.
Yes. Yeah, dude. They want it. It's the years of us waiting for a Jason Aldean or a Brantley Gilbert record every 3-4 years.
Yeah.
It's been gone for almost a decade now. It's crazy.
Unless you're like, even like, look at Morgan. I mean, he's putting out records like that, but he's doing 36 songs at a time. And then literally 3 months later, he'll put out another song. Like, it's like,
yeah,
everything's very quick.
He'll start teasing track one of the next 36 song.
Crazy.
Dude, it's crazy,
it's
man.
It's crazy, but he has the money to do that. You know?
Dude.
And he has the team. I mean, he's the best team in town. So that's awesome. I mean, I'm happy for him, but not everyone can do that for sure.
Yeah,
you know?
Man. Everybody's got to work in different ways, man.
Sure.
Talk about your time of coming in. You talk about like at the tail end of the, one of my favorite eras, because everybody, they're at our age, because you're how old?
36.
You're 36. I'm 30. So we're kind of in that same ballpark. And everybody remembers going to an FGL show and drinking Fireball at the tailgate and watching.
For sure, bro, country was hot. Yeah,
bro, it was like I call it the sex, drugs, and rock and roll of country music. It was our hair metal. It was our FGL, and
it was great.
Dustin Lynch and Luke Bryan and those guys were our Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses and Whitesnake.
Yeah, and that's what I learned in the writing process. That's where I grew up. Was like FGL, Sam Hunt.
Yeah.
Like a blend of those two, probably.
It's a party, man. Yeah. It's you're out in a field or you're in a parking lot. You're hanging out. Girls are dancing on
I call
trucks.
It adjective country because
adjective.
Yes. Like FGL, Tyler Hubbard, in my opinion, is the king of adjectives. Like every, you know, hot summer, sweaty, sandy night. Yeah. Like it's like four adjectives in the noun or whatever. Like and FGL was the king, and that's like that was different of that.
Yeah. So
and
what was
every
it like,
song was like?
Yeah.
That.
What was it like coming up in that era?
I mean, I knew writing that was a party song writer. Kind of like what I did more than like sad ballads. So whenever I got to my Colorado cut, I was like, okay, I can maybe do more of this like all the time. I could probably get pretty successful at just writing party songs for people because no one has them and everyone needs them and everyone loves them. And the live music scene was coming back and blowing up and crazy. So it's like, maybe that's just what I should do. So I've got more songs that are just like me partying than like I did the whole bro country lyric thing pretty well. So, and because that's what I grew up listening to and I loved it and I miss it in a way, you know, but at the same time, it can only resurface lyrics so much. I mean, I understand why that's why it's out, not because we don't love it. Everyone still loves it.
Yeah.
The reason why that it's not doing what it did, that's why it's an era, because an era is something that you do and then until it gets resurfaced so much that people are tired of it.
Everything,
that's what an era is.
Everything cycles back around. Like right now, we're in that neo-traditional thing. Where butt rock is back of the 90s, 2000s, where it's like Nickelback, Limp Bizkit, System 100%. Of a Down, Korn. Those guys are all back. Creed, like Crossfade, all those bands are back. And it's like the bro country era is going to come back eventually.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to cycle through. I think everybody just got so damn sad during
COVID.
And
it's really still there. It's just in a different light. Like it's not a bro country bonfire banger. Like it's like more like a bro country sad boy banger in a way. Like the sad boy bangers are a thing. Because
Morgan's
right
still doing it.
Yeah.
You could argue that Morgan is still very much, but to me, to have the perfect live show, you gotta have that moment where it's like you put your arms around your boys or you hold your girl tight and you're just
100%
getting after it in the lawn at Ascend Amphitheater.
That's what they want to do. They come there to drink and party and have a good time. Yeah. And listen to music. You know, like whoever's playing, they're going to be there for it.
Yeah, like even Zach Bryan, like Revival is that moment in his show.
Yeah.
Open the Gates is that moment at that show.
Dylan Marlowe, like, here's to the boys back home, drinking dirt road, you know?
That would have been an FGL quadruple platinum number one song.
God.
You know?
I mean, massive. Yeah, it's like around here. You know, it's like, I mean, all those songs are just like, we say the same thing, but it's no different than someone that doesn't do that, like their songs say the same thing too, just in a different light, you know? So it's just like, however, I don't look at really country music like that in a way. I look at it like, because I'm definitely, you know, not so much country music. Like my music is not country for the most part. I've got 808s and, you know, pads and all kinds of stuff going on. I'm not, but I also have steel guitar and banjo. So it's like, you can't say that it's not country. But if the more into the 808 world and like the hip hop world, like the influences that I have, I go, the more country my lyric goes. So it's like, to me, I'm about the lyric. If it talks about country, growing up in the country and country shit in it, then it's a country song.
Yeah.
Like I don't care what the music does. There's a lot of songs that people will argue that are country songs that I'm like, this ain't even a country song. It's like talking about feathers in the wind and shit. Like it's not even about like country people's shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, this is not a country song. This is a folk song or whatever, you know, and I'm cool with that too. I love that stuff too. I love that music. But the arguments that people have these days are crazy.
It's like, what's something that somebody in a small town is going to relate to and bump? Like,
people were bumping. Relatability is everything. Yeah,
dude, people were bumping Nelly and Boozy Badass and Lil Wayne and all that stuff, man.
All day. long. I was.
Yeah, I was. Sure. I was too in New York, and I'm not even from like a super small town. I'm from a New York City suburb.
Dude, when we opened up for Nelly that day, that when you were there, and that was insane,
bro. Nelly's.
I've never
show?
Seen him live. Never like at all. You know, and I grew up. I mean, Country Grammar. I know every word to every song on that record.
Hey, you and the band were jamming, bro.
Dude, I was.
Dalton was having a good
like,
time.
I was new. I knew every word. Like, yeah. And I loved how he like. I love art. Like, to me, the art is like he comes out to. Family Tradition by Hank Jr. And then every four bars it would go dun, 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 like it's going into Country Grammar. Yeah. Like how do you like some of the art like the, it's very artistic to me and I love that.
Yeah,
and,
man.
He crushed it, man.
Dude, God. Yeah, my some of my favorite sets of that weekend, which you and the boys killed it too, man. It was great to see you guys do a show again.
Yeah,
man. That was a fun freaking day. But the real treat of Crossroads 41, which shout out to everybody in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Those people are
fucking
fans. Nuts, man. We had a good time though. I was up there for all 3 days. So
yeah, I bet. It was a blast.
We went to the local dive bar. I got a full Oshkosh experience and it was awesome.
It was
but
fun.
What some of my favorite moments were Nelly's set. Then Flo Rida played the next day.
Yeah, but that was I saw videos of it. It looked awesome.
He had
like people up on stage.
He had girls and that were in the pit or in the VIP.
He's pulling them out. Huh?
Yeah, he had like 30, 40 women from of all ages, all shapes and sizes on stage for about four songs.
I think that's fun. I think
Bro,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a party. He put on a 60 to 75 minute party.
Yeah,
of just nothing but hits, and that's the thing about like Nelly, like Nelly and Flo Rida, they just have hits. Like,
they can do whatever they want because you know the song already.
You forget how many features Flo Rida was on.
All of them,
bro. It was nuts.
So many,
and they have like their crew of like their other guys. That
it's
like Flo Rida had all of his like Miami guys, and Nelly had all the St. Louis guys. Like that was a cool part too. Was like
seeing their
crew.
Production of everything. Yeah,
yeah, and like their crew coming in and singing on everything, and everybody's kind of got their moment. And they got the dancers. And then they're bringing the people on stage with them, man.
It's crazy.
It was a party. I love that the festivals are starting to go in that all genre thing. I think that benefits
the Crossroads Festival is a cool thing.
And there's other ones out there that do that where it's like a little bit like Rock the Country does that, where like Afro Man's been involved in that, or Nelly's been involved in that, or like a T.I. or people like that. I think that
they're blending it, yeah. And that's what we grew up listening to.
And that benefits a guy.
The people that buy concert tickets did not. Just listen to one thing.
Never, dude. And I think that benefits a guy like you who gets a little bit like adventurous on the production side of having an 808 in there, having a hook
or a metal
that just goes
grunge guitar. Yeah, whatever.
Dude. Or having Dalton and the boys rip on the guitars, man. Like, it benefits a guy like you to all genre festivals, like country has reached that moment where a guy like Luke Combs is playing Lollapalooza. Like,
Bonnaroo. Yeah,
Bonnaroo, the folk festival in New England, the jazz fest in New Orleans. Like, country's at that now.
It's crazy. Luke Combs played Bonnaroo this year. I remember seeing that and being like, not what I thought, but I'm proud of it.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I was talking with Kurt Ozon last night, and Kurt was telling me, or was telling somebody, he was like, yeah, man, we've just been doing, Luke's been doing side quests this year.
Side quests
of doing these all-genre festivals. And I'm like, thank God he's doing it because he's kicking the door down to where somebody like you could go and play like a rock festival. You could play a festival that leans a little bit clubby, like, with your production style, like there's so many different lanes that your show can fit in.
For sure. And I love leaving the door open when it comes to like, I love writing songs. So it's not really about what I want to do or what I want to sing about. It's like, if we write a good song today, like I might want to cut it, you know? And if it might be about my family, it might be about drinking beer. It might be about getting over a girl. It might be about a made up story that never happened, you know, but it's more about, I'm a melody guy for sure. And that opens the door for my live show to be like you said, I got Jamie and Dalton up there with rocking guitars. I mean, it's it's a rock show, you know,
the band sounds and looks good. Dog.
I mean, they're banging up there, you know? So it's like, it's a rock show it's close to almost metal show, but it's like the music has the 808s in the background and stuff. And that keeps it. And the tracks and everything that we have in there keeps it country and I keep it. I mean, it's me that's the country part of the song, probably, you know. but man, people are loving it. The last three shows we've had have been the best three shows I think I've ever had.
Where have they been at?
I don't know.
Do you remember?
I don't know.
Do you remember? So have you played since Crossroads?
Yes, I played three times since then. Or I played Nebraska.
I love Nebraska, dude.
Dude, oh
my God. The Midwest
goes
so hard.
They are so hard. Like, we have people that say that country is here, country there. No, dude. No, I'm telling you right now. I went and played a county fair in Nebraska, and somewhere I don't even know Nebraska. Like, I mean, the smallest town I've ever played in, ever. And there's 3,000 people that knew every word to almost all of my songs. And I'm like, I'm like blown away. I'm talking, they're holding up signs with my songs on it. Like,
big timing in a small town, baby.
Like tattooed by people, like my name's on their arm and shit. I'm like, these people are diehard.
Yeah.
And they love new country and they love country in general. They know everything. You know, I played with Rodney Atkins there that night, and it was like, we're completely different artists. You know, and I grew up listening to him.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone knew all of our songs, mine and his. And it was like the crowd, the fan base did not change because they're just happy to see a show because they probably haven't seen one in that area maybe ever or in a long time. So it was like really, it was really like eye-opening for me to see like the Midwest killing. Yeah, in short, it's insane.
Yeah, man, I love the Midwest. Talk about coming up with the guys of like having your songwriter crew of like, you talk about Hunter, you talk about Hardy, you talk about like Smith Enquist, like Brett Anderson, CJ Solar, like your guys' whole crew. Like, what was it like kind of cutting your teeth with those guys before
they were
blowing up?
I was like a year after them, all of the, like Smith and Brent, Hunter, CJ, I was like the little baby of the group. Like, so I don't even consider myself in that group really, because they were like so tight. Like, they were doing all the whiskey jams together. Yeah. They were doing all the, you know, everybody
It was like Band of Brothers,
yeah, Jameson,
or something, right?
You know, everybody, Band Rogers, of Brothers. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody wanted to be in that crew. And I wasn't like, I was friends with Hunter and Brent and Smith and Jameson. Like, we'd wrote a lot, but just a few times where these guys are writing like once a week. I'm like, once a month probably. So I was like the little guy in the group, but the biggest guy in the group, but the littlest guy in the group. So I don't consider myself, I was like a year after, but
well, what'd you learn from them, being a younger, being like the younger brother?
I mean, dude,
like,
some of them guys are the best. Like, I walk, like I said, I'm the luckiest son of a bitch. I walked into the best, like Hunter riding crew. Like, he was new here. We kind of taught each other how to ride a little bit. Like, we were like each other's, like, you know, he'd been in town a year before me. But like, when you meet Brent Anderson, you ride with Brent Anderson, Smith, and Jameson, these guys are next level, dude. I'm like, I can go somewhere and write four songs in one day. Like, what are we doing here? Like, we got something here, you know? Like, me, Smith, and Brent went to my houseboat one summer, and we wrote 9 songs in one day and drank probably 50 beers apiece.
Wow.
And, you know, like, it's 3 a.m. and I'm clearing off the table about this size. And Brent's like, there's beer everywhere. He's like, dude, we've drank a lot of beer. And I'm like, Brent, this is the third time I've cleaned this table today. Like, we've drank a lot more than you think.
And we're writing songs,
and they're not bad. Like, I cut 4 of the 9 on one project. Like, it wasn't like we were writing just to be writing. Like, we were writing all hits that day, you know? And some of these guys, I think, deserve so much more credit and the ability. I think some of the best writers in town are the writers that can't get their songs to people because they're that good. They're so good that they don't leave the work. Like, because they're working. Like, they don't have the team that can call Morgan Wallen and get him a cut or whatever, you know? Some of these guys are like, they're working. And so, like, and people haven't heard their freaking insaneness. Like, I just cut a song called You in the Sun, which is, I didn't write, and Brent showed it to me like the second time I ever wrote with him, like in 2017, he showed me the song, and I remember like literally like getting floored, being like, I can't write a song today, I need to quit my job and go home right now. Like, this is the best song I've ever heard in my life. And that songs like that, when you get that feeling, like, to me, I was like, I can't believe I forgot about it, because I know Blake Shelton had it on hold at one point, and I called him like last year and was like, do you still have that song, or did someone cut it? Like, I haven't heard anything about it. And he was like, no. And I was like, can I cut it, please? I need one more song to finish my project. And it's the last song on my album that's coming out. So it's like, some of these guys, like, when you hear the lyrics, like, I sound like shit on it because his work tape was so good. I was like, I'll never be able to do what Brent did. I love Brent Anderson so much. But shout out.
Yeah.
And I was like, how about you just produce it? So Brent produced the whole thing. And it's like, just lyrically, if you just listen to and like read the lyrics, it's insane. Like, every line compares your ex to the sun, and it's like, it's just good. Yeah,
that's awesome, man. Yeah. So talking about the record, what you're looking for, What's it like having your, after all these years of doing this, having your debut record out, it being songs that you've written with your guys, and just tell me about, like, where did the title for the project come from, and kind of walk me through the process of getting this bad boy out.
Randomly, I have had that title for the album for a long time, like probably like 2 or 3 years. And I thought that would be a cool thought. I had this song that I wrote called What You're Looking For. I was at opening up for Brantley Gilbert at a freaking mud bog somewhere in Tennessee with Whiskey Jam. And
that is the most, it was me Drew and
Meg,
Green
it was, thing. It was me. It was like an acoustic around. It was like me and Megan Patrick and a bunch of people. And we were in the, we were all sitting in this trailer one night, and we were all drinking and having a blast. And Ward was like, everybody get out your phones right now and play the weirdest, craziest song that you've wrote this year. Like, I don't care if it's terrible work tape, just play the weirdest song you have. And I just gotten this song called What You're Looking For back, and it's got this weird, like it's like almost cowboy, like Western, like rattlesnake kind of thing, you know, vibe.
Yeah.
But also like this Indian, I don't know. It's just a different song with 808s and halftime freaking, I mean, it is the craziest thing for like music and listeners. Everyone that hears it goes, well, that's really different.
Yeah.
You know, and I played that song and everyone flipped out. I hadn't showed anyone yet, but everyone flipped out and they were like, dude, you've got to cut this song. Like, you've got to, like, someone has to. And I didn't take it like that serious because, like, it's just so different.
Yeah.
And then it just sat in my pocket for like 3 years, never touched it again, talked about it. And then we got talked about doing the album and we produced it and we got it done. And I can't wait to tell Ward that, because I haven't told Ward that yet. But I cut it and named the whole project after it. But yeah, and that kind of shows like my music, like, because the song is like, I don't want to be a cowboy, I don't want to be a six gun, I don't want to be all these things that I've been before. Like, I just want to be what you're looking for. Like, so it's a love song, really, I guess. But it don't feel like, it's like very like off the cuff, like badass in a bar talking to a chick kind of thing.
Nice.
But and I feel like a lot of my music does that, so I feel like that was a good thing for the project. Like, all the songs blend really well to me, and I was not expecting that, because one day I'll be writing a song that's like, you know, George Jones country, and the next day I'm doing something that I'm like, damn, Jeezy could cut this.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's literally that for me right now. So it's like, it's every day is different, but at the end of the day, when I'm done with both songs, I'm like, I feel the same. Like, I love both the same. So I'm happy with that, and I think there's a lot of people out there that like listening to it, you know?
Yeah, what's the one that you think the people are going to resonate with the most?
My favorite that's doing well right now is the one we just put out called Ammo.
I was listening to that on the way over here.
And I shot a crazy cool video for it. That's like, I mean, like war. It's so cool. Yeah, we didn't go alcohol. The whole song's about drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
But we didn't do that for the video, because that's what anybody would do. So we kind of went straight up by guns with it, but it's sick. It's okay. Like jets and bombs, and it's badass, bro.
No shit.
It's like Call of Duty.
Where do you go to film that?
I went to Lee Bryce's house. Yeah, I went to Lee Bryce's farm. Yeah,
just blew a bunch of stuff up. And,
well, we had most of its visual effects, yeah. But we were like in the trenches. I mean, like, there's like dirt getting flown on me, and there's explosions. Like, yeah, it is crazy. Yeah, he's got a beautiful farm, dude. Like, Lee Bryce has like heaven on earth.
And he's one of the nicest guys. One of the nicest dudes in town. Like, he's OG.
Man, I'll say this, just like I've said this before, but I'll say, I remember and I'll never forget that Peach Pickers played at the Ryman one night. And I'm 2 years into town playing 6 to 10 at Thursday night at Tootsie's. And it's like 9 o'clock and I'm singing, "That ain't my truck in her drive." And Red Akins walks in the back door of Tootsie's with Dallas Davidson and Lee Bryce and like the whole crew of Pete, all of them. They're all freaking hammered and they're walking in, and Lee Bryce, like, it's dead, but Lee Bryce goes and they all go to the bar, but he comes right in front of the stage and he grabs a stool and he pulls it right in front of the stage and sits down, like, so intimidating. And I'm like,
just right in front of,
like,
you,
like right in front of me. I'm like, hell yeah, cool. And my band's like, "You know any Lee Bryce songs?" And I was like, "We're not playing Lee Bryce songs." I was like, he doesn't want to hear me play his song. Like, that,
yeah,
that would be weird to me.
Yeah.
You know? So I didn't do that. And he watched like an hour and a half of my show. And,
wow.
And hung out with his crew and stuff. But he kept coming back and sitting down right in front of me. Like, he kept going, like, and I'm like, dude. And then at the very end of our set, he like comes up and like talks to me and was like, "Man, you got a really good band. You should keep them with you for a long time. And you should keep doing this too." And he was super nice. Just like, well, he didn't have to do that. You know, he could have been a dick, and or he could have been just not said anything.
Just not acknowledged you at all.
I know that we're playing downtown Tootsie's band. Like, I know we're not great. Like, yeah. It's like, I know we don't sound great because you ain't ever been downtown. But like, man, these guys sound awesome. You know, this is not a thing downtown. Yeah. And so he was the nicest, probably even to this day, one of the nicest guys I've met ever. And I feel like I've opened up for almost everyone. So shout out to him for letting me use his place, because he didn't even know who I am, and let me use his place to shoot a music video, you know, stuff like that. It's just like genuine. He don't care. I'm not hurting nothing, you know. And if I did hurt something, I'd probably pay for it, you know. And it's just country. He's just a country boy for sure.
Yeah, yeah, man. There's not. It's like.
I want to try this.
Oh, do it, man. Yeah, try it. You an iced tea guy? You like iced teas?
I'm a vodka guy.
You're a vodka guy. That counts. That counts. Yeah, try it. Try the Surfside. A little iced tea. Can't even taste the vodka in there. Yeah, they're crushable. They're crushable.
Yeah.
They're known. They're,
oh, man. They're like beyond crushable.
Yeah, the slogan is no bubbles, no troubles. It's not a seltzer. It's a Surfside.
That's sunshine sick, in a can. There's so many people that don't like. Like, I love
the carbonation.
The carbonation, yeah. And so, like, this is for them.
Yeah, that's something that you could just pound those on a boat.
Oh, it's like so light.
You
it's
just
like,
pound them on
like
a boat.
It's like lighter than water.
That's what people do, man. They're big on like the golf courses. They're in almost every baseball stadium right now where you can buy them. They're in.
That like so fast.
Yeah, man. They're crushable. Nikki T puts work on those things. And they that make like be. A green tea, a lemonade. The green tea's got like 30 milligrams of caffeine in them too. Those have natural caffeine.
There's green tea and vodka.
There's flavored iced tea. There's flavored lemonades. There's all kinds of shit.
I'm gonna take a little box of them.
Oh yeah, that's what we're doing, man. I'm giving you the box. That's what they're there for. Yeah, and we got a bunch of hats over there too. You grab some hats.
They're freaking good. Oh yeah, man. You know I'm a hat dude.
No bubbles, no troubles. Surfside.
Oh, you know what? It's funny. Speaking of hats, with Raised Rowdy, like I remember when y'all first came out, like somewhere in that.
Nikki T started 2017 was when Nick started the blog and started printing hats.
Okay,
and shirts.
I remember seeing all this stuff, and I'm like, these guys are gonna be fucking massive. I just knew, and I felt it. Like I just knew something felt right about it, and I was like, I'm gonna hop on this train and try to get in there with them boys off the get go, because I feel like what they're doing is cool, and I want to be part of it.
Yeah, the wild thing for Nick was, Nick tells me, because I moved here 2018, so I was not far behind you. And I used to work downtown, too. I was a bouncer at Zero
with Ethan
and Dave and Tyler and Dakota and all those boys. With Joey. Yeah. Joey worked down there for a while. Like, I was down there doing that and everything. But I remember seeing Nick posting stuff. Like, I would find artists through who Nick was talking about on the blog. Sure. And it was like Nick, it was Sarah, it was Katie. It was like he had somebody in Chicago, somebody in New Hampshire, somebody down here in Nashville. Nick obviously was in Pittsburgh, and it was like people didn't know where Raised Rowdy was at, because Nick was talking about guys like you, the Ryan Nelsons, the Muscadine Bloodlines early on, like all the Meg Patricks, the Ashland Crafts, the Job Fortners, you know, like the Taylor A. Holbrooks, like back in the day, like.
Well, y'all, it's the underground, but y'all have a way big platform than you probably gave yourself credit for. Like, you could make anyone probably really famous.
Well, our thing is, man, appreciate you saying that, dude. I mean, we're guys that I used to go to 100 concerts a year when I was in New York. I'd funny, you talk about Brantley Gilbert. I drove to Portland, Maine to see Luke. It was funny. Luke was actually the first of three the night that I went. Then he got moved to direct. Combs, Tucker Bethard. It was Brian Davis, Luke Combs, Tucker Bethard, and Brantley Gilbert.
That's insane.
And Portland, Maine. I would drive 5-6 hours to go to a concert. Nick would do the same thing. Nick and his friends used to.
You love it.
They would chase shows, is what Nick would call it. He'd see
show chasers.
Yeah,
dude.
Bro. He'd follow Cadillac 3 for a whole weekend.
That should be a TV series.
Yeah, bro. He'd go to a Cadillac 3 Thursday, Friday, Saturday show across three different states. Him and his friends would carpool,
have a blast,
and they'd go just like the girls down in Alabama, I call them like the Vines, like the diehard Muscadine fans, like Katie Brooks and
Katie's my girl, bro.
Katie, Joanna, like Brandy Hewitt in Mississippi.
I love that you just mentioned Katie. Shout out Katie, bro. Yeah, Katie was like my first diehard fan.
I know, man. She used to freak out when I would have you, because I met all of them when I was selling Gary and Charlie's T-shirts on the road for Muscadine.
I love people
man.
Like that, man.
And Katie was somebody that would always freak out when I'd have you.
She would drive literally 4 hours a week to see me play at Tootsie's for probably 100 times.
Yeah.
I'm not even exaggerating.
Yeah, man.
I mean,
That's what it is.
People love it.
That's what separates country music from everything else.
It's like 100%.
People don't love, I mean, I'm sure there's people that are like that about rap and hip hop and rock and EDM and whatever, but there's something special about the country music. There's something special about the Katie Brooks of the world, the Nikki T's of the world, like where it's just, you love it. Like I used to watch, you know, Dave Hangley.
Yeah.
So Dave's the reason I moved to town.
Okay.
I used to go and watch Dave play cover gigs across New Jersey.
Sheesh.
And I had him on my college radio show in freaking 2014. And then Dave moved down here and he'd call me once a week and say, bro, you got to move. But it's supporting the guys in your scene. Just like you had your people at Spanky's or you had your regulars that would come and see you and the boys play at Tootsie's. Sure. Like, people just feel connected crew, with you guys as an artist. Yeah, man, it's the crew. It's the day ones. And those people, I'm sure there's a list where it's, I mean, Katie's in a special category, but I'm sure there's other guys. There's other guys and girls that have kind of been with you day one that were with you from the Tootsie's days that are now so stoked to see you put out your first
record. And it's crazy, like you not forget about them, but like when it's been so long since I played there, like yesterday when we leaked that we were playing the Opry coming up, it's like, all the comments that I saw that was like, I remember watching him in 2017 at Tootsie's. I'm like, how do you remember that? I mean, it's like they've been following me. That's the day ones that have been following me way longer than I even realize, you know? It's like, it's crazy. It's wild.
You know? Yeah, man. It's freaking awesome, man. I'm so excited for you. And just what's something that you would tell that well, there's a few ways, I guess. I always like to ask this question of like telling you when you started, but it's like you've gone through multiple chapters of this thing. Like, what's something that you would tell that guy that was playing at Tootsie's, that was cutting his teeth, now knowing what you know now in 2025, getting ready to drop your first full length album on a record deal, having the success that you've had? What would you tell that young, hungry kid in 2016, 2017 when you were getting your start?
I think from my perspective, a lot of people would say go network, and they're not wrong. I wish I networked more. I would probably be a lot bigger than I am right now if I networked more from the get go. But I'm a farmer, and so I work. And so if I'm not at home with my family or doing something I want to do, I want to be working. You know, and so I think if you have the passion to want to do it and you can sing. If you just want to do it, I think if you have the passion to want to get up and go do something about that every day, then you should be doing it, because I write songs. That's what got me in the business. And so in my head, I want to tell you to start writing songs, because if you want to be an artist, there's not that many artists that just sing other people's songs. There's a few. There used to be a lot in the 90s, and it's coming back around a little bit, I think. But at the same time, you don't have a thing yet. If you don't write songs and all you do is sing other people's songs, then you don't have a thing yet.
Yeah.
And I think it took me probably $30,000 of worth of demos and
that house.
And yeah, it took me a lot of years and writing and time figuring what mine was. You know, I grew up on the Eric Church songwriting. I was a big fan. When I moved to town, I was curved bill baseball cap hiding behind a guitar singing like Eric Church.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what got me in the business. And eventually I realized that that wasn't me, because whenever I write and you write and you write, you start doing the same formulas that aren't what you were wanting to do. It's like, I can't help it. This comes out. Like this Drew Green comes out every time I write a song. No matter what, if I'm writing for Blake Shelton, it's going to get a little Drew Green in it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when you realize your sound. And so I think in order for me to do that, I had to write for 10,000 hours probably.
Yeah.
So, like, I think if anybody really wants to do it, my advice would be to go do it all the time. And I'm not saying you have to write songs, but if you're not writing songs, you need to be singing somebody's songs all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you need to be recording in the studio every day.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause even that's a whole learning process. I mean, it's like a job. It's like anything else. You're not just going to – the COVID thing happened, and there's little things that some people just walked right into freaking stardom, but they're still, they're catching up on work that they're still working their ass off.
Yeah. What I say to that, and I love a lot of the guys and girls that have popped since COVID, and
some of them are amazing.
There's a lot of them that are in our family and that I consider close friends, but they had a very tough learning curve in 2021. Absolutely. When the world opened up. Some of them had notes on their set lists of take off hat here, talk to the crowd here, because they'd never been on stage before.
Yeah, like exactly.
You having the reps that you had preps you to, whether you're playing a show to no one or a show to 10,000 people.
I remember, I'll say this because he's a friend. I remember opening up for Bailey once, and when he first, like, who is Bailey Zimmerman still? You know, like, who's this guy? And then I'm like, why is there so many fucking people here? Oh, Bailey's playing in a minute. Like, I'm like, okay, this guy has like this Taylor Swift thing going on. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of people here to see this dude. Like, what the fuck? I'll just be playing off the fucking bridge.
Yeah,
like,
this kid,
he's got one song. Like, how is it this pop? Yeah. Like, he, like, it was insane that day. I really, like, that's when it hit me. And then he comes around the corner, and me, we're cool. He gets on stage, and he just runs on stage, and he takes his shoes off, and he throws them in the crowd. And I'm like, what the fuck?
What's he gonna wear the rest of the
show? What's he doing?
Yeah,
I'm like, I mean, my mind was blown. Like, yeah. I was like, what is he doing? And I think, like, being so new into the scene, like, that was his mechanism to. He crushed it. Like, it was like he made it look like he knew exactly what the hell he was doing.
Yeah,
and I think that was like his tick of like. He goes out there and runs. He's crazy. He's jumping, swinging his hair.
Yeah, he's like a spider monkey.
Yeah. And I'm like, everyone, you can't take your eyes off of it because you're like, what's happening right now? What's he about to do?
Yeah.
And that's the genius. I was like, that's genius.
Yeah.
Like, and he owned it, you know? And he, like, that takes that a little bit. Like, I think that's awesome. Like, whereas somebody who's played 10,000 shows, they're not going to do that.
No.
And he's not going to do that when he gets to 10,000 shows because he won't have to.
No, and now
he won't have to. He don't have to now.
And he's learned.
Yeah, he can walk on stage.
And he's learned from Morgan. He's learned from Nickelback. Yeah. He's learned from.
Well, he's comfortable.
Yeah. Now he's a festival headliner.
He knows that
now.
People are coming to see him play.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
at the time he was worried about probably getting to the lyrics of his songs. You know, he's played six shows with his band before. He's very new. I've been there too.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a, you know, it's definitely a learning process, and that was his. He owned it. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Gavin is a similar thing
Jeez,
for me too.
Yeah, same.
Because Gavin, it's funny. We
cool. Got, throw beers at me.
We've been lucky. You know? We've been lucky too with Raise Rowdy. Like, we've been doing events in town so long but in the round with me and Nick with Rowdy on the Row and everything. Where Bailey's first show ever, his first performance ever, was at Live Oak. He had never played in front of people. He was still living in freaking Illinois.
How crazy.
And Chief and them had him come down, and he looked at Nick afterwards and was like, man, that was my first time. And Nick's like, oh, in Nashville? He's like, no, that was my first time playing in front of people. Austin Sean was playing guitar for him. Bailey, I'll show you the picture after with his curly hair.
Like that. Those stories like that aren't normal.
And Gavin.
And people that we're talking to right now, the people that are thinking that you might want to do this, that is not normal. And that's not. That was because of the where the world was at, and that door was open for him, but that door does not open.
No,
that door does not open ever, and it will not probably open again.
And Gavin, same thing. Gavin played the first Nothing Fancy takeover of Rowdy on the Row, and that was his first time in Nashville.
Crazy,
you know. And it's like he comes out, and it's a thing, man. We're going down to see him in Statesboro, Georgia again in a couple weeks. Which
it's a great show.
Man, it's a fucking it's chaos. It's fun,
is.
Man.
People
it's
love
fun.
It.
He's one of the few shows where usually I like to be in the pit, like how we were for Nelly.
Yeah.
But for his show, I'm like, I'm going to stand in front of house.
I'm going to stand in front of house. I don't know what's going to happen. And that's true.
It's wild, man. So what do we have coming up for the rest of the year? Obviously, this album coming out. Just talk about, again, I know we started up talking about, but just for you coming from the path that you came from of cutting your teeth downtown and singing other people's songs and the ups and downs in the roller coaster for Opry debut. How big does it feel? How big of a moment is it going to be to stand in that circle coming from where you come from and the roller coaster? Because it's a roller coaster for everybody, but for you, man, it's a roller coaster that truly has had so many ups and downs over the last 8 years.
I think mostly what I remember sitting out back of Tootsie's smoking a cigarette once, and I remember being wasted one time and like 10 times and just thinking, man, I'd love to play the Ryman. I'd love to go play the Ryman. And then, you know, I've been drunk and like I've thrown up on freaking Ryman before.
Tootsie's house band shit.
Yeah,
everybody's
yeah,
done it.
Yeah, everyone, you know. And I remember just thinking, I'm not going to go until I play there, because I'm going to play there. I'm going to play there. So I never went. And I got off. I'm a huge Incubus fan, and Incubus played there one night, and I had like someone offered me like front row tickets, and I didn't go because I was like, I'm gonna play there. And I played there with Mitchell Timpani, and it was great. I'm the same way with Opry. I've never been there. I've had so many opportunities to go, and I want
so many buddies play.
Yeah. Oh, dude. But I'm not. I'm just like, I feel like it's like the chip on the shoulder thing. Like if I don't go and I keep telling myself I'm gonna play there, I will play there. And that's the kind of how I operate. So it's like so I've never been. I'm really excited. I've seen lots of pictures and videos of people playing there, but I mean, it's like the Super Bowl of, in a way, of where a country music artist and someone that grew up, that loves country music and the tradition of country music, that started country music. So I can't wait to be there. Yeah,
that's awesome, crazy, man.
That I could even be included. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Hey, man, it's well deserved.
Thanks, bro.
It's so well deserved, and you've earned it and literally gone through every step of the way to get there. And, man, I would say the way that 2025 is closing out, 2026 is going to be
I hope so, man. I'm hoping to line it up, yeah.
Yeah, what are the goals for 26? Is it shows? Tour. Is it tour?
Yeah, I would like to do what you're looking for, a tour, probably. Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. That's my end. Like, that's what I want. That's what I'm shooting for. And that might be a small club, you know, thing. I don't care if it's 20 people.
If you're playing at Cruisin's, I will be there.
Yes.
We will bring the Rays Rowdy. We'll bring the Rowdy Shit Show to Cruisin's.
Wayno.
I'll make it happen. I'll text him after this and be like, you got to get Drew Green.
Let's go. That was, man, I've played there twice, and both times we've been like top tier shows.
What was the other one? So you did it with Trey back in the day. With
Trey, and then I did it just me. Yeah.
Oh, you've headlined there.
Yeah. It was, and I was like not at the headlining stage yet, like where I probably could. So like I think they had like a college night thing. So like to make it work. But yeah.
Yeah. Have you been there? How long ago was that?
Probably 2 years.
Have you been there since Ducks opened up?
No.
They opened a bar across the street. That's the after hours bar that they also
own. Where
that
little market used to be, like right across the street or like?
Next to the market. So it's Casey's Liquor Store Ducks. God. And Wayne cooks breakfast at Ducks from time to time. So he'll be up all night, and then he'll stay on site and then get up in the morning because they do breakfast in there at like 7 in the morning.
They know how to party.
Yeah, they're different up there. Peoria's just a different animal.
I mean, I'm like, what has happened? I have shotgunned 5 Red Bulls and... Yeah, I mean, like,
and,
what am I doing
and
right now?
They have that Surfside stuff there. Surfside works with them too.
The green room is just loaded
with, I mean, obviously every kind of thing, but cases of
they
that
treat
stuff.
You right. That's what. More importantly, Wayne, shout out, because like I just got a brand new crew. We're opening up for Trey. This is the first time I play there, and this dude takes the opener out for a steak dinner.
Yeah,
and like probably spends over $1,000 on our dinner.
Yeah,
and we feel like rock stars. Treats us great.
Yeah.
Gives us like somewhat like he went above and beyond what any owner of a place usually does. So like I will always play there if he invites me. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, man, hell yeah. Well, so
I love people like that.
Yeah, man, so hopefully a tour next year, and then are we looking at more music coming out?
Yeah,
I know we're on the four week program right now, right?
So we'll sign, like I'll probably I guess get the next option for my label, and then I'm gonna go right in. Like I've always done it a little different. I think I'm gonna do it different this next time. I've always do like recorded a song, send a song into like my, you know, my team, but yo, what do y'all, I love this song, what do y'all think? And then I'll record it, and I'll record another one, and then it's kind of like more sporadic, whereas this time I think I'm going to do it like the old school, a little more old school way, and I'm going to go in and record all of it one time. Like just pick the songs, even if I wrote them 5 years ago, whatever, like pick up, make an album and record it. And I think definitely that's what I want to do. It might not be the best thing to do, but that's what I'm going to do, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure that'll change 100 times because I write so much. Like I'll write something that changes that, you know, 10 times. But that's my plan right now. Yeah.
Yeah. How many days a week are you writing right now?
Just like 3.
Just 3. So it's light now.
It used to be like five or six, I'm sure. It still feels really busy because I'm doing some like I'll have to shoot content one day.
Yeah.
You know, I'll have to do something like this one day. I'll have to do a vocal one day. So it's like there's a lot of stuff in between, or meetings, you know, with whatever, you know, there's a lot going on, but like 3 days is kind of hard to even do. Like I was in June, I had like 3 5-day weeks, and I was like, I remember calling my publisher and be like, dude, I can't do this anymore. My wife's going to leave me. I haven't been home. I haven't got home until 8 o'clock at night, every night this week. And I'm dead, dude. I don't even want to write. Screw country music. I hate it. You know?
Like, yeah, talk about the support system of having your wife and you've got the one son
and a daughter.
Oh, and a daughter. So now
my son's 8 and my daughter's 4, man.
Wow. Yeah. So talk about having that support system and just how much you love being the family man and being that good old man, like, yeah, with your kids.
Dude, it's everything. It's like my wife, I wouldn't be sitting right here without her, for sure. She's a nurse practitioner, and so like my first 6 years of music was her living under her, you know, her paycheck. And I know a lot of guys would say, well, man, that sucks. Like, you know, the guy's supposed to provide, the guy's supposed to do this. 100% agree, and I think that was our investment, and she was making an investment in me because she believed in me.
Yeah.
And she's a workaholic. I don't care what she says. Like, she just loves to be doing shit. And she'll work 7 days on, 7 days off. And her seven days off, she gets Botox for
wow,
5 days. So she's like a full blown working all the time. And I'm like, babe, just quit. I'm like, you can quit your job and just be a mom anytime, please. Like, I'm happy with that. And we won't have as much money, obviously,
yeah,
but we'll be happy. We'll still be happy. We can live. We could definitely live. She's like, no, she loves it. She's actually way more calm and better than when she's working. Like, her off weeks is when we fight. You know what I'm saying?
That's funny. And then talk about the kiddos, man.
Oh, man. Levi, my son, he's 8. He's just started second grade. He's freaking, he's a genius, really. I think he's way smarter than I am, I think. Like, he's just
that nurse practitioner gene.
But I think he's got like a building. He wants to, like, I think he's gonna be like a contractor or something.
Oh, is he like Legos just, and shit like
dude,
that?
Dude, I have a room like this full of Legos he's made by himself.
Wow.
Like, he's like doing like the 12-year-old Legos. Yeah.
At 8?
Like, he's just crushed. I mean, he'll sit there for like 8 hours. Like, he's just like, and he loves doing that. My daughter, she's the wild one. He's the sweetest, like, holy, like, I it's like almost like he's a baby still. Like, he's so sweet. He's like, yes, sir, and like, so mannered, so well, perfect. She's the freaking wild cat, dude. But she's got me wrapped around her finger, so it's I like it, you know. I'm definitely a daddy's girl, but I love it, man. Yeah, I love being at home. I love touring, and I love I've kind of, in the past 2 years is when I realized that, because 1 year I played 188 shows or something, and I lost $60,000.
Yeah.
I'll tell everybody, I don't care. I played 100-something shows, and I lost that much. That's how much I lost that year. I was like, I'm not doing something right.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm getting these shows booked, and I'm opening up for Alabama. I'm opening up for fucking Hank Jr.
Yeah.
I opened up for everyone that year. Sam Hunt, Darius Rucker, John Party, everyone. But I got to a point where, like, I'm either going to have to start making money or staying home, because I'm making some fan base, but you really don't see the growth like that you want to see losing money, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, and I played arenas, I did the whole thing. I've done enough shows where it's like, it's not like I have to play this show. I don't care how much I lose, dude. You know, I've been that guy. I was that guy for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I lost a lot of money doing that, being that guy. And I'm very fortunate to even get the opportunity to be that guy.
Yeah.
But, I've got to a point now where it's like, okay, let's make money or stay home. And so, like, if I think everybody probably hits that point, and that's where I'm at. Yeah.
Yeah. Are the little ones, are they going to get to be at the at the Opry?
Yeah.
How special is that going to be?
I cannot wait, because Levi's only seen me play like twice.
Really?
Yeah, because he was so little, and so he's seen me play like the CMA Fest and about 2 years, and that's it. And Ruby's seen me play like once, yeah, and she was like too little. This will be like the first time she'll even remember seeing me play, probably, yeah. So I'm really excited.
That's gonna be so freaking special, dude.
Yeah, I can't wait.
You're on a roll right now, dude. Congratulations on everything, man. And
y'all too, man. Y'all too.
We're hustling, man. And there's ways we could definitely do some cool shit together. Like,
absolutely, always.
I think you were definitely raised rowdy, and I think you're raising your kids. Especially, it sounds like little Ruby definitely getting raised a little rowdy. We'll have to get her.
She's so country, man.
We'll have to get her in one of those little raccoon shirts or something.
You know, like, I have a country voice for sure. Like, everybody. It's like, he definitely, if you're like from the north, like, this guy's country.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but like, I don't hear it, you know, And I feel like mine's not that country, but like I hear her talk, my little 4-year-old girl, and she's like, "Daddy, what are you gonna do that?" I'm like, she's gonna be the countryest thing that's ever happened. Yeah.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Sounds like Lainey Wilson walking around.
That's awesome, man. Well, hey, man, thank you so much for coming out here and hanging, man. Yeah, man. I'm so excited for this record to get out there.
Let's go. What you looking for?
It comes out very soon, right?
9/19, yeah.
9/19, and then the Opry debut.
The 27th, yeah.
Is 8 days later.
That's right.
That's wild, man. What a September. What a month.
I'll give you a shout out. I'm gonna try to plan like a party. I'm not the best party planner, but at all. Like, and I don't do surprises, so I'm gonna try to plan like a party or something. I'll hit you up.
Me and Nikki T will be there. We'll bring a case of some of these.
You gotta do that, bro. I'm gonna try to take care of everybody. Yeah, for once. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Hey, well, we appreciate the hell out of you. Y'all be sure to look up our man Drew Green. What you're looking for? It's out on 9/19, baby. Can't wait. The full length record. Get out there and pre-save it, pre-add it, do all that. That stuff that we do now in the streaming apps where it's like, instead of pre-ordering, heart it, do share it, repost it, whatever the things.
Man.
All the damn things. And if you're in town, 9/27, a very special day. This man's making his Grand Ole Opry debut.
Thank you so much
for coming on. Shout out to our friends from Surfside.
It's really good.
Drew likes them.
First one.
You'll like them too. No bubbles, no troubles. It's not a seltzer. It's a Surfside. We're sending Drew home with an 8-pack of them. You can share them with the wifey too. Help her unwind a little bit.
She don't love the carbs, and like the carbonated, and she'll like.
Yeah, there's only 2 grams of sugar. There's like, I think it's like less than 100 calories or something.
Three grams of carbs.
Yeah, no, it's right move. They're ready to go. And for more on us, you can visit RaiseRag.com. From Andrew Green, I'm Matt Brill. This has been Outside the Round.
I ain't never been the kind for staying one place for too long. Never been the best at saying I love you to a girl I love. Only got a couple drinks on my sleeve, they usually just make them leave.